Love, Part 11, Polywism. Enjoy it.
A few years ago, a friend introduced me to a band called The National. I have not stopped listening to their albums over and over again. This band has that special something, that kind of what you call pop, or that charisma to them. The band opens you. Good music opens you. Opens you to truth, opens you to beauty, opens you to love that is all around us. My favorite song is called The Fake Empire. Now, this song is just absolutely incredible, and I'd like to describe it for you today. The song starts with a mysterious crescendo on a synthesized string. Then, before you know it, the pianist, Bert Bluss, bursts into the song. With his right hand, he plays a 3 pattern, and with his left hand, he plays a 4 pattern. He's playing 2 different rhythms on 1 instrument. This is incredibly difficult. Musicians call this polyrhythm. It's this polyrhythm throughout the song that keeps you on the edge of your seat. It keeps you attentive, alert, not knowing what instrument is going to come in next. Then comes the voice of the singer. It's strong and steady, but at the same time, it's laid back, unforced. And at the chorus line, the singer says, "We are half awake in a fake empire." At that moment, the snare and bass drum come in to this polyrhythm. Then an electric guitar. And just when you thought this song couldn't get any better, a trumpet and a trombone in an aggressive polyrhythm bring the song to a conclusion. But the power of this song is not knowing what comes next. You are on the edge of your seat wondering, wow, what could come next? Who'd have thought that a rock band would make it to Sunday morning worship in Rifle, Colorado? The song, Fake Empire by The National, is just like the letter to the Ephesians. The letter to the Ephesians is polyrhythmic, doing many things at once that keep us on the edge of our seat, attentive, ready to live out this life of love. The letter to the Ephesians, through poems and prayers and prose and word pictures, seeks to move us. It seeks to open us to the reality of God's love within us and around us and to our world. It's an incredible vision that this letter to the Ephesians has painted for us this summer. So allow me to describe it for you one last time through the song. The mysterious crescendo on the synthesized strings begins, and we receive these mountaintop verbs. We're strangely warmed by this idea out of nowhere that we are people of blessing. Rain on top of rain, gift on top of a gift. We are people who are blessed with spiritual blessings, who have been chosen to walk in the way of integrity, who have been adopted as sons and daughters, who have been redeemed, restored. We've been given a great inheritance, and we've been given the deposit of the Holy Spirit within us. That's how the letter begins, showering upon us a new reality of who we are in God. Incredible. But then, that piano starts in with the right hand 3 pattern and the left hand 4 pattern. We come to chapter 2 and we're amazed by, in chapter 2, we are given the effects of personal decisions. Those eddies that hold us back from being everything that we are created to be, and those undercurrents that drag us away from living in love. But on the left hand, we're given a whole nother reality, a social reality of what division and differences and prejudices can do. And we're given the reality of the cross that brings us peace, that breaks down that dividing wall so that we can live in the shalom of God, living in the beauty and the power of what God intended us to live like. Then, out of nowhere, we are surprised by the chorus line. And in 2:1, we hear a chorus that punches us like the line, "You're half awake in a fake empire." But the chorus says this, "You were dead in your transgressions and sins." That line doesn't settle well with our souls, but it awakens us, keeps us attentive to the bigger theme of the Ephesian letter. And the big theme of Ephesians is simply this: you can be fully alive, building God's empire. That's the message that these early Christians had for us, that we can become fully alive, building God's empire here and now. It's taken me a long time to realize the power and weight of what Jesus came to do. Jesus didn't come here to get us to heaven. Jesus came here to bring heaven to earth. Jesus is not about otherworldly realities. He's about this world reality. And as Christians, we are called to make a new world for all, a world of peace, a world of justice, a world where love is the anthem that we sing to one another. And this love works its way out in our relationships, in our families, in our communities, and the world is transformed. That's the Ephesian vision. But before we know it, in the Ephesian vision, we have electric guitars, bass drums, and cymbals clanging. But we never expected that we would be a part of this vision. But we are called and gifted to build up one another. We have become God's multifaceted wisdom to the world. We also, in passage 5:15, we're called to make the most of the days to come. We are amazed that we are given the instruments and asked to play in this great song called the Christian faith. We're given the drumsticks and we are called to shower love upon our most intimate of friendships and relationships. We are called to pick up our harmonica and to use words that build a new empire for all. We didn't realize that the song, the beautiful anthem of building God's empire, would come to us. That we would be able to play in God's band, transforming the world. And then, last but not least, those beautiful trumpets and that aggressive polyrhythm and trombones bring us to our final passage of the series, 6:10 through 18. And those trumpets, they tell us to stand, to be alert, to be attentive to the way that God is working in our life. But we ask this question of ourselves. We see the great vision to play in God's band, to make a new world for all, but often we're tired. Often the challenges and difficulties of our day get us down. Often we fail to live in love with one another. We set out with the best of ambitions, but before long we feel, oh no, life has gotten the better of me. I let anger come out on my kids, on my loved ones. And sometimes there's those other realities of we just are plain apathetic to what God is calling us to do. But the question that this last passage works with is, how do we live in love? And the answer is strong. The answer is stay attention to these four key things. So the verse 10 says, finally, continue to be empowered by the Lord and by His mighty strength. The word here, empowered, translates the Greek word dunamis. The call is to grow in the power that you have in God. You were created in God's image. You have a power running through your veins that we have barely tapped into yet. And as you tap into this dynamic, life-giving relationship with God, all things are possible. Transformation, reconciliation, a life lived in love. But notice that it happens when we are in that direct communion and companionship with God through the church, through Bible study, through honest conversations with friends, through music that moves us. We're opened up to what God has for us. Then, So we become attentive, in verse 10, to the power of personal growth. We have to remind ourselves that God calls us to this lifestyle, but it takes us a lifetime to work it out inside our souls and to follow God faithfully with lives of love. Then the next passage says, put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand against the tactics of the devil. For our struggle is not against blood and flesh, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the worldly rulers of this present darkness, against the spirits of evil in the heavenly realms. Notice, first of all, they talk about our stand against the tactics, the methods of the devil. Now, this isn't that red costume figure with a pitchfork and a tail behind him. The verse goes on to describe it's the rulers, the authorities. It's a bigger power system than we imagine. And what I find interesting is that no enemies are named here. There's not all those Romans who are beating us up, or that high priest who's unfair to us, or that governor who did this to us. We look beyond the people to the system behind it all. Early Christianity understood if you change the system, you change the world. So we are prepared for what the system brings to us, for those systemic things that cause violence and injustice to us all. It's kind of like the Pixar movie WALL-E. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but in this great movie, basically there's a scene with the captain. Now, the captain of the ship, he is the captain of all the human beings who are, they're sort of on this extended cruise stay out in outer space somewhere. And as they're on this cruise, you see on the wall, it's been generation of generation. This captain, you see him, he's big and plump, because they're all big and plump, because they are in these sort of these wheelchairs now that they don't ever walk. They don't ever go outside. They eat slushy stuff that gives them their correct protein. They've abandoned the planet Earth because it was corrupted and decayed. And so they live on this, not touching one another, inoculated from any sense of feeling of love. And this captain hears news that the Earth has come back. There is green growth and we could come back. And you see on the wall the pictures of his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather. And from the very beginning, the captain looks strong. And then as the generations go down, they're all these plump, fat figures. And this captain, he recognizes that he has to stand up against the system that is the ship. And unless he stood up, none of the people could return to planet Earth to become fully human. So this captain, just like this passage, urges us, don't look at just people. Look beyond the people, to the families, to the systems that have caused great pain in their life. If you transform the system, you transform the world. So we need to be attentive to the power of systems at work in our life. Then the next passage goes on to say, because of this reality, put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand on that evil day. And having done everything, stand firm. Therefore, stand and fasten the belt of truth. Put on the breastplate of righteousness. Put Converse All-Stars on your feet. That's straight from the Greek translation, I'll have you. That will prepare you to share the gospel of peace. Take up the shield of faith that will enable you to quench the flaming arrows of the evil one. Put on the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. In the Greco-Roman world of the first Christians, there were battalions of Roman soldiers everywhere. They sustained and monitored the empire, expanding it at times, calming the flames of controversies at other times. So every normal person would get up every day to see a Roman soldier. So the Ephesians make use of this imagery to show us what it, the readiness, the preparation, the discipline, the confidence that it takes to live in love. Notice with me that the belt is equated with truth. The breastplate is equated with righteousness. The feet are equated with peace. The shield with faith, the helmet with salvation, and the sword with the Spirit. So this early Christian letter has defined these pieces of armor as if to put a mental imagery in all the early Christians' head is, be prepared for the battle that's ahead of you. Be prepared. If you want to live in love, if you want to stay away from apathy, if you want to transform the world and yourself, make sure that truth and righteousness and peace and faith and salvation pour forth out of your character. So there's one quick move we have to make here. This is not a call to Christian arms, but a call to the readiness and training that love requires. So they're not asking you here to join the Roman army, which would be an impossibility for a Jew or an early Christian. They're asking you to, in that same discipline and regimented and preparation that an army person, a military person would go through, train yourselves for the act of love. Love demands a lot of us. We have to constantly and consistently keep a thought on our minds' judgments to love one another. Keep close our loved ones in our heart and empower and grow that relationship that we have with God. And then, the very last. So, we are attentive to the power of Christian virtues. It's Christian virtues that change the world in this passage. Very, very powerful. Then we move to the very last verse that we're going to study today. And I remember myself in the Pepsi Center watching the U2 concert several years ago. And the set was awesome because U2 is awesome. And there's nothing totally memorable about the set other than my heart was open to beauty, open to truth. I remember starting out, sitting down, and then by the end, I'm raising my hand, and I'm drenched in sweat, enjoying that music that's being played. But then, what's outstanding, if you've ever been to a U2 concert, is they get to the end, and they do the encore, and of course, the encore was awesome. But then, the very end, after the encore, they stand up there, and they start to play a song that they made years and years ago on their first album called War. And they call the song 40, and it's essentially Psalm 40. They don't change anything. The lyrics are straight from the Bible, and they just begin to sing it. But as they sing, everyone begins to sing, right? It's like this rock concert turned to a worship concert. Everybody is singing and into it. But then the drummer, Larry Mullen, he steps off stage. Bono, with his strong voice, is still leading us. I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined and heard my prayer. And I will sing a new song. Then, before you know it, The Edge, the guitarist, steps off the stage. Then Adam Clayton, the bass guitar, steps off the stage. We've got an a cappella concert with Bono, with everyone in the Pepsi Center singing along. How could this get any better? But it does. So then, Bono sets the mic down. Everybody continues the anthem of the psalm. We're singing a prayer in the Bible at a rock concert in downtown Denver. And it's echoing out. And then I keep thinking, can this get any better? But it does. As we exit the rows and as we walk down the escalators and the stairs, they continue to sing the song. How long to sing this song? Everyone is echoing this song. We get to the parking lot and people are still singing this song. They're singing a prayer from the church in downtown Denver at the Pepsi Center. Then Stacy and I, we got on the light rail, and in the light rail, people were singing the song. Now, I'm sure there's a whole lot of other people that were like, those people are crazy. But that doesn't matter. And so they're singing this song, and it's interesting to me that the very last verse of this Ephesian letter says, pray in the Spirit at all times, in every prayer and petition. Pay attention and continue to pray for all the saints. That's the last passage. And it's interesting that there's three sets of prayers. One prayer happens at the end, at the very beginning of chapter 1, and then in the middle at chapter 3, and then at the end at chapter 6. It's as if they're doing everything possible to remind us to pay attention to the power of prayer in our life. The power that prayer can to sustain us, to help us to live in love with one another. So this beautiful letter casts this vision. asking us to be attentive to our personal relationship with God and the power that that is, to be attentive to the power of systems at work in our world, to be attentive to the power of prayer, and attentive to the way we are growing in Christian virtues day after day. Music, just like the Ephesians letter, has a way of opening us to truth, to beauty, to love. Prayer does the same thing, opens us to truth, to beauty, and to love. May you, the good people of RUMPC, be inspired by the Ephesian vision. May you live in love, praying, dancing, singing, and rejoicing that you were made to transform the world. Amen.